Hello and welcome back to a new week at the Damage Report. It is a good week, a celebratory week for two reasons. One is Bernie Sanders, obviously, which we're gonna be talking about, his Nevada performance, and almost as important, Emma Vigeland's in studio once again.
Hey.
How's it going?
Hi, it's going well, how are you?
I'm glad to have you here. I'm sure Bart even more so, because you can clip out your voice even more and use it against me when I'm at my lowest. So that should be exciting, but thank you for joining us for this week. You're gonna be joining me a few times.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you watch the main show, which it's not really necessary, but if you do, we're gonna be, along with J.R. Jackson, co-hosting the main show all week.
All week, can't wait,
it'll be really fun.
Anna's out, which is a little sad, but then I get to hang out with you even more than.
Exactly.
Usually I have to split my time contractually between you two.
We got rid of all the cool kids and now the nerds get to rule.
Yes, but we'll do a whole hour long segment on Lord of the Rings tonight on the main show, tune in.
Can we? Who's gonna stop? Well, JR would stop us.
Yes.
But we also have a debate coverage tomorrow night. So there's a lot to look forward to, a lot to look forward to on this episode as well. I'm not gonna preview everything, but I will let you know, we're gonna be closing out the show, taking a look at what effect that last debate had on Mike Bloomberg amongst various groups. It's pretty interesting, so look forward to that. But before all that, let's jump into the news of the weekend. We've now had the Nevada caucuses, and it was expected that Bernie Sanders was going to do well, but he did, in fact, even better than he was predicted to, crushing the competition with the nearly finalized results, which we're gonna show you right now. I believe this is 97% reporting. He had almost 50% there, more than lapping second place Joe Biden, and it pretty much falls from there. But one of the reasons we wanted to include the full graphic, because there's a lot of people still running for president. Not all of those are. Andrew Yang is out. I think Michael Bennett might be out, but they still managed to get some of the CCDs. But there's still a lot of people in this thing. But in terms of the actual support, it seems to be coalescing around a number of names. Now, you're not seeing Mike Bloomberg there because he's not running in the first four contests, because he's a billionaire and he's better than you and I. He doesn't have to. But what do you think about the results? You were in Nevada.
I was in Nevada. And you know, none of the candidates except Joe Biden even stuck around. So Bernie was in San Antonio, I believe. Elizabeth Warren went all the way, you know, to Seattle to campaign, because people pretty much knew what was gonna happen. So I went to a Biden event where he took some digs at Bernie about how Russia wants to get him elected, But it was great. I mean, what was really cool was to see how the Culinary Union workers kind of bucked leadership. Leadership obviously went a different direction and was fear-mongering about Medicare for all, and the workers themselves had a very different attitude about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And they reflected that in the way they voted for Bernie Sanders in overwhelming numbers. Bernie got around 70% of the Latino vote in Nevada. And so when we're talking about building a broad coalition, a coalition that can defeat Donald Trump in November, he made a great case that he's that candidate.
Yeah, I mean, hypothetically, Joe Biden has a broad base. We might see that in South Carolina. But so far, in terms of the actual results, no one has demonstrated other than Bernie Sanders.
Well, Biden has still, in his entire life, not won a primary or caucus, ever.
But
ever.
Still the most electable, though.
Still the most electable without having won anything, apparently.
Yeah.
And second place was the best he's ever done.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
That's...
So congrats for Joe Biden.
Congrats. I mean, he was they were cheering for second place at his campaign party. So,
Yeah. I tweeted. So I was relaxing in Catalina. No big deal. It was a wedding present. But anyway, I was having a good time. But we did. My wife and I are both, you know, obviously politics nerds. So we spent hours watching the results come in from our hotel room. And so we watched all the speeches. So hypothetically, all of the candidates give speeches, but in effect, they all give victory speeches, even though there's only one winner. All of them are like, you've done it. Nobody said it could be done, but we got fourth.
Right.
And so my favorite victory speech was the one from the victor. But anyway, also an important note, and when I first saw people tweeting this, I didn't believe that it was true. But this is the first time a Dem or GOP candidate has won the popular vote in all three early states, Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada. I can't believe that that's the first
Someone
time.
Someone was saying Al Gore did it.
Yeah?
Someone was saying that because I retweeted it and then got some responses like, actually, and I unretweeted.
Yeah, I also retweeted what looked, it was a very good Photoshop job. It was another one of those, yeah, hey, Bernie won, but if you add up all the other people and it turned out it wasn't real.
Oh,
it's just exactly what all
too.
Of the mainstream media has been doing, so I was duped.
Right.
But anyway, it was a great Photoshop
idiot.
Job.
Idiot.
I am an idiot, I am. But that's like, so, take a look at that. And so I have an op-ed out right now. It's in The Hill. It's what if Bernie has already won this thing? And I wrote that, it was published after Nevada, but I wrote it before Nevada, projecting that he would do well. But like in the op-ed, which you should read, I make the case that I don't, in my entire lifetime, no candidate has at this point, who's not running for re-election, had this strong of a position in the primary. And that was before we knew that he would be this history-making person, at least going back to Al Gore, possibly longer. Like if that was Biden, or if it was Buttigieg, or Klobuchar, or whoever, the media would be crowing it from the rooftops. But now it's like, I saw it on polling numbers on Twitter, and that's it.
Well, they're crowing about different things. They're actually just bleeding from their eyes. That's called tears. They're just,
it's
they're
a
crying.
Medical condition. A villain from a Bond movie has that.
I have not had enough of my coffee yet, right?
Yeah.
But they're whining and crying and very upset. And it goes to show that this is this strong of a position. They know it's sinking in for them that Bernie Sanders is very likely to be the Democratic nominee, knock on wood. And it's starting to freak them out because these results are undeniable. That the base of the Democratic Party is not where the elites and the leadership are, something that we at the Young Turks have known for a really long time. And that Bernie Sanders is the front runner because he represents what the people want, not what leadership want.
Yeah, and by the way, like I'm glad that you mentioned that he's the front runner because there are still some people in the media that don't get that. Like Chuck Todd lost his mind a week ago saying he's not a front runner, let alone the front runner. Literally that night as the results were coming in and it was clear that he'd won, I believe MSNBC and CNN had already called at that point. Bakari Sellers said he's still not a front runner.
Bakari Sellers,
he won the first three.
You know what? That reminds me, we had some Twitter spat a year ago where I said Bernie would win South Carolina, and he says no chance. So I'm gonna have to dig up that old conversation, and we'll see on Saturday.
I wouldn't bet every dollar I have on that yet. He could still come in second in South Carolina. But
he
we'll
could,
see.
But look, Biden is overrepresented in every poll, and Bernie is underrepresented in every poll.
Yeah.
And I mean, the numbers are starting to really align and come close with those two.
Yeah. So super fast question: what does your gut say? Who is the centrist moderate alternative to Sanders at this point?
Oh, Kloba Buttigieg Blurberg?
It's Kloba Buttigieg Biden.
Ah.
No, but really, like, do you think is Biden gonna do well in South Carolina and that will push out Klobuchar and Buttigieg? Or is it Bloomberg who hasn't
run yet? I think the
yet?
Greatest threat is Bloomberg because he really, well, one threat in terms of what he would do to this country, but two, because even with that amazing dismantlement of him in the debate by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, even with that, it takes a while for that to trickle to the voters. And I worry that the deluge of ads and just the overwhelming of ads.
A tsunami.
Right, sure. the overwhelming amount of ads that people are seeing in these Super Tuesday states, it could not get to them by then. Although it is affecting the numbers in some way. But
he's leading in Florida in a poll I just saw. Well, so we're gonna
Bernie's
talk about Bloomberg more.
Florida, but yeah.
It doesn't look like
it. Yeah, there's no chance.
So we'll have an update on Bloomberg to close out the show. I will just, spoiler alert, it's gonna be a little bit of good news. But anyway, I do wanna go to one other aspect of this weekend. So over this weekend, there were these big rallies, obviously. Bernie had his. It was, you know, a jovial mood because he'd won the first three. And at his rally, there was a bit of a surprise guest. Take a look at this.
And she is here to endorse Bernie Sanders for president.
The fact that as a little girl, I put my hand in front of my heart and I pledged allegiance to liberty and justice for all turned me into a woman who gets really pissed when I see it not happening. And we have been trained in America over the last few decades to expect too little, to say pretty please about things that should be the right of every American. Today, we're tired of saying pretty please. We're going to stand up. We're going to show up because we woke up, and we're going to say with grace, we're going to say with style, we're going to say to all those who say liberty and justice cannot be done, sure hell can be, because we're here and we're with Bernie.
Thank you,
Bernie. Yeah, such an amazing speech. You should watch the whole thing. Marianne Williamson seems like a good actress playing a politician.
Yeah.
Because she was like so emotional. There was like an arc to her speech.
And she had an accent that she's never had before in
her
life.
That's true. Although she is apparently from Texas, which I hadn't known.
She's back to her roots, so comes out. She's great. Like, there's so many condescending, I think, liberals who talk down to her and talk down about spirituality and make fun of it. But it's representative of a large portion of this, of Americans and people who want to put kindness first and don't necessarily believe in organized religion. And she does represent that kind of mentality. And I think she's a good person. I'm really happy that she endorsed Bernie Sanders, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I obviously didn't support her for president or anything, but like I got to, she's the only presidential candidate that I interviewed in person. We had a great conversation. She seems like a lovely person. I don't agree with her on everything. We had a big disagreement on the show, actually. But she had endorsed him in 2016. I was holding out hope that she would do so. It seemed like she was sort of supporting Yang while he was still in, but not endorsing him.
Right.
And with Yang leaving, she's now out for Bernie, and that makes all the sense in the world. I wonder if Yang will endorse anyone. I mean, now he's a commentator.
Yeah.
I don't know that he will necessarily do that. But I love to see these candidates who are moving out, including de Blasio also endorsing Bernie Sanders. Like yes, it's a big fight in the debates, you know, out there, they are fighting. But there is overlap between some of these, and I like to see them coming together. Look at Bernie, the unity candidate, bringing together all these people.
Yeah, and so one would hope that the one candidate who does not have a path to the nomination, who's still in the race, who aligns with him most ideologically, would do the same, take a page out of Marianne Williamson's book, and perhaps think about endorsing Bernie Sanders before the convention.
Her supporters, from what I've seen in tweets, seem to believe that she's continuing to run mainly to elevate issues. That's the thing that we see. I don't necessarily agree with it as a strategy, but that's the argument I've read.
It's not issues. If she was caring about the issues, it would just be throwing herself behind Bernie Sanders. It's herself. I mean, people have egos.
I would bet that at some point she will do that.
I think she's way more likely than not to endorse Bernie Sanders. She should do it soon.
Before Super Tuesday would be great. But we'll see.
Before the convention, please, God.
Before Christmas.
Right.
No, I'm kidding. But anyway, we do have to take our first break, though. When we come back, we have a guest who's going to be joining us. Stick around, lots more to come.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
When it comes to voting, obviously we have many concerns. We want as many people to vote as possible, and we want to make sure, especially in the past few years, that the vote is as secure as possible. But what about the possibility that those things might butt up against each other? To discuss this and more, we're joined by the senior writer for The Fulcrum, Bill Theobald. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Glad to have you here. And so I want to talk about your article. You wrote an article titled "Efforts to Grow Voter Turnout May Delay Election Results." Can you expand on that concept for us?
Well, you know, as they're trying to make efforts around the country to get more people access to voting, one of the things that they've done is expand a lot of mail-in voting through and a lot of access through different kinds of voting, and particularly using the mail for absentee ballots. Mm-hmm. And in the process, there are places in which they are worried that the huge number of absentee ballots are going to make it very slow to actually count the vote on election night. Could delay the votes in a key state like Michigan for perhaps maybe 2 or 3 days. They're talking about now.
Mm-hmm. So I want to return to that, but I am curious that because since you wrote that article, we had the Iowa caucuses, oh, yeah, which had a problem or two. Do you think is this emblematic of what you were talking about?
Sure. Yeah. Exactly. I think that what you have here, there's so much concern now with two issues, and you brought them both up. One is getting more people access to vote, and the other side of the equation is making sure the system we have is secure. And when you give more people the access to vote, but you slow down the process because you're going to be more careful about how people go about voting, it's inevitable that you're going to take a little longer to count. And I think the danger is, and the concern is that people's attitudes and their faith in the system has been shaken. And if they start seeing that results are not coming in when they normally do, it's going to cause people to worry. Now, whether that's valid or not is another question entirely.
And I guess one of the fears might be that that worry could possibly translate into lower voter participation, which would be an ironic outcome of an effort to try to boost participation.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the chemistry that everybody has to work with is here that runs elections. They have to sort of balance these different aspects. Now, I think it's probably a good thing that people are trying to try out different things to get people better access to voting, because not everybody can get to the voting place, get to the polls during the time period on that Tuesday. So the fact that things are being done a little differently isn't a bad thing. I think it's a good thing because it gives different people who are in different life circumstances a better chance to actually exercise their right to vote. But the question then becomes, whether or not, because things are being done differently, the election officials are going to have a new experience that's going to take them a little bit longer. And they're going to be taking extra precautions to make sure that things are done in a secure way. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the big things to make things more secure is to have paper ballots. But again, that takes a little bit longer to get things counted. And so you are playing this kind of, have this dynamic where you don't want to have another factor that's going to make people more concerned. So but that might be what happens.
Well, the core question I have, I suppose, is the delays that we're seeing now, is this a necessary outcome, or is this simply there are a lot of experiments going on? We don't have a lot of experience with some of these things, especially in particular states, but that hypothetically, with more trials, we could figure out some ways to do this where
Absolutely.
We get the best of both worlds.
Absolutely. I think I would say it's the latter. State of Michigan, again, is a good example because they're trying to get a law changed there which doesn't allow them to actually start counting absentee ballots until the polls close. If they could actually start counting the absentee ballots when they receive them, then some of this delay would probably be taken care of. The concern there is that the law allows people in Michigan to change their vote all the way up until the polls close. Mm. So you have this strange dynamic. But again, I think that, yes, I think the answer is that there is some changes that'll happen because things will be new. That'll probably cause some delays. The question is whether those election officials will be able to be more nimble. And that's one of the things that election people, administrators talk about a lot now, is the ability to adjust and to react to problems in a way that doesn't cause, that they solve the problems and the public is not sent reeling and thinking, oh my gosh, there's some problem going on here.
So one other concern, I'm interested in your opinion on this. How much to blame is the media, like I guess me? Because I know on election night we do coverage and I'm sure. sitting with an iPad and I'm hitting right. refresh over right. and over and over.
Oh yeah. Yes, I think that that's kind of another irony. I think that's exactly what everybody who's ever covered politics, that we've gotten to be a culture where everything is so fast and instant. And it's getting faster, it's not slowing down. And so now when you're telling people, well, we're gonna have to slow down a little bit this time to be accurate, to be secure, that's something that's maybe part of our responsibility as journalists to tell people that there might be this kind of slowdown, but it isn't, does not mean that there's necessarily a problem. It's just that we've gotten so used to getting those results so quickly. It's amazing how quickly they do come in.
So is Emma here? Is there a way to expedite the process of getting results for further elections down the line, basically? Because, you know, while I get what you're saying, I do think that it does, in essence, undermine some of the confidence that voters have. And perhaps there could be new technologies or processes sure. That would allow for this. And we could create an infrastructure going forward, even if it's not available in 2020.
I think that there could be some improvements. I think just the fact that they'll have a new experience with these systems, they're going to be better at it the next time. So, and I don't know for sure exactly how much delay there will be. I think they're trying to kind of warn people that this is new to them. They're expecting in many of these places, they've gotten this policy now in many states called no excuse absentee ballots. You don't have to have a reason. You can just say, look, I want a paper ballot and they'll send it to you. And there's four states that do all of their voting by mail. So I think to answer your question, I think that things will probably improve just as people get better acquainted with the new systems that they're using. The real underlying problem here is that the technology for security is lagged behind the ability of people to hack into systems. Mm-hmm. So until that technology gets better, you're not going to be able to use some of the electronic systems that we now do most of our banking and other aspects of our lives. You're not going to be able to do that without there being concerns about security issues.
Yeah. Bill Theobald, senior writer for The Fulcrum, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, a little bit more on the Nevada caucuses. We want to touch base with some of those who lost their minds as the results were coming in after this. As the Nevada caucus results were pouring in, if you're a Bernie Sanders fan, it was a pretty good night for you, but not so for everyone. And perhaps the leader of that camp would be Chris Matthews, who started talking like this.
I was reading last night, Brian, I know you're a history guy too. I'm reading last night about the fall of France in the summer of 1940. And the general, Renault, calls up Churchill and says, it's over. And Churchill said, how can it be? You got the greatest army in Europe. How can it be over? He said, it's over. So I had that suppressed feeling. I can't be as wild as Carville, but he is damn smart. And I think he's damn right on this one.
Damn smart, I don't know. So just to be clear, if you're not a history guy like Carville and Chris Matthews, he is likening the win of Bernie Sanders in Nevada to the Nazis invading France.
Seems like a poor move to say about the first, the most prominent Jewish candidate in mm-hmm. our nation's history. Who has lost family in the Holocaust, yeah.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna say, I'm not as crazed about this as I saw some people online, just because, like, if you look at his delivery of it, the way he's smiling, like, this wasn't like I'm gonna be dragged to Central Park and murdered, Chris Matthews. This was like, hey, I'm crazy, Chris Matthews. So I don't think he got what he was doing as much. I'm not saying he shouldn't be mad about it, but this to me isn't as bad as like Chuck Todd literally calling the supporters of Bernie Sanders digital brown shirts. It seemed like he was being folksy in a really, really bad way.
Well, you have to look at it as a part of the totality of what he's saying. So I think it is pretty insidious to say that just because a candidate who's espousing issues that talk about healthcare and universal rights and bringing poor people some dignity, all of those things, and saying that it's like an invasion or it's like the fall of a civilization in many ways, or likening it to one of the worst events and scariest moments for Europe and the world in the history of the entire planet. That's really, that shows how disconnected he is from everybody else, and also shows how genuinely threatening a Bernie Sanders presidency is to the wealthy and to the media establishment. Yeah. So, you know, I've been pointing out that Bernie's coalition is not dissimilar from what Obama did in 08, because he would be able to turn out the Midwest, and Obama ran on kind of economically populist ideas as well. And so that's why you saw, you know, in 08, those Midwestern Obama voters, and then they flipped to Trump in 2016. I think Bernie could take those very people back.
I feel the same way.
But even Obama, who marginally, in just rhetoric, threatened the media establishment, they were not as bullish on, I mean, they liked Hillary Clinton better at the time in 08, I get it. But that they knew, okay, you know, he's talking like this on the campaign trail, it's not gonna actually be anything that's threatening. And that was the reality when he was in office.
He was basically like the Nazis taking Poland.
Right, exactly.
It's not quite, see, this is how ridiculous it is.
But they're actually, they know that Bernie is not playing around, and he wouldn't be playing around as a person in power. Mm-hmm. So that's why you get these unhinged responses, and exactly. What he's saying here is just ludicrous.
Yeah. Imagine if I was like, these first three wins, that was the landing at Normandy. Yeah. It was the beginning of taking back that which has been, that would be a ridiculous thing to say. But at least there, it's good. You're likening him to be one of the worst historic villains. Anyway.
Why didn't he just call Bernie Satan at this point?
Yeah,
I mean, that was.
I don't know how religious he is.
That could have been some anti-Semitic stuff there too, but like, anyway, go on.
Okay, well, we have a little bit more of Chris Matthews with less history, which is good. So let's go to that.
And it looks like Bernie Sanders is hard to beat right now. I'm with Carville all the way in terms of the dangers of what lies ahead in November. I'm very much aware of them. They're sitting on so much Oppo research on Bernie, what he said in the past about world affairs, how far left he is. I'm not sure how far left he is, but they're going to make the most of that in terms of world politics. They're going to kill him. But I think it's a little late to stop him, and I think that's the problem. By the way, if you look at the pattern, it's dynamic. Bernie won the popular vote in Iowa. He won it again in New Hampshire. It looks like he's going to win it here when they finally get a vote. Bernie's been winning consistently, and I think it's mathematically understandable.
What?
So look, at least he's being honest. He's coming out and saying, it looks like they can't stop Bernie, and that's the problem. So he's being very clear.
You know what, John? He was going to give you healthcare, send your kids to college for free. He's going to do all these things, but you're probably not going to vote for him because he said something positive about Castro in 1972.
Wait, what?
Yep, it's over. It's over. It's over. Done.
Well, oh, and say you're with, probably going to endorse Klobuchar anyway.
Right, say you're with James Carville. Bad idea.
At this point,
he's a raving lunatic that goes on TV wearing a hat. You just don't do that. Take off the hat.
I know it's not the same thing, but like in his recent appearances, he gives me like James Woods vibes.
Wow.
It's like you're bringing him on because like he was big back in the day, but he's just there to say crazy stuff.
I'm gonna say this in a pet. This is kind of petty, but he's married to a Republican strategist, and like, I don't know. If you're really like, you have values that are aligned with the progressive movement, it would be really hard for me to marry a Republican. I don't know about you, but I mean, he's proud
I've
that
tried
he does.
Dating and it's not great. Right. It's not a great idea.
Yep. Yeah.
Not if you're opinionated and unreasonable, as I am. Okay. With that, let's be fair. Let's move from Chris Matthews up halfway across the spectrum to the right. So MSNBC are not the only ones who are freaking out about the possibility that Bernie Sanders could be the nominee. Over at Fox News, they have their own concerns. Take a look.
overall markets.
Is this sell-off all coronavirus, or is this the first time the markets are open since Bernie Sanders took control of the Democratic battle?
The Bernie factor is finally rearing its head in the stock market. Molina Health, one of the biggest health insurers in this country, is down 8%. United Health is down over 6%. Anthem is down 5%. Hospital stocks are getting hit. It's community psychiatric is down 5%.
Can you directly attribute that sell-off absolutely to Bernie Sanders?
Drug stocks are down 4%. I mean, Teva's down 4%. Mylan's down 3%. There's absolutely no doubt. Now, these stocks got hammered when Elizabeth Warren was in the lead. And when she had her biggest point of, leading in the polls, all of these stocks were under an extreme amount of pressure. As she began to wane, and some of these names like Molina Health
for all
came out with great earnings estimates, they rebounded pretty nicely. This is the first time I think Wall Street is taking Bernie Sanders very seriously.
2 p.m., making money.
Making money. We got it.
Well, I love it. I love it. I hope all healthcare stocks crash. I hope it's done. Mm-hmm. I hope the industry goes kaput.
Mm-hmm.
With just the prospect of a Bernie Sanders presidency, that would make things a lot easier for him when he's president and is instituting Medicare
That's
for all.
True.
There's no healthcare industry to worry about anymore.
Exactly.
Sell off now. Sell your medicinal or pharmaceutical stocks now. I'm serious.
Just put it all into Bitcoin.
And also, again, only 50% of Americans have any stake in the stock market. That includes 401ks, that includes IRAs, that includes all of that. And it's just a rich people problem. And of the stocks that are owned, it's mostly with the top 10% who own that percentage of stocks. 90, 80, something like that.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't affect anyone except the wealthy.
Exactly. And that's why it's Fox Business, not Fox Economy.
Right.
They're not talking about the economy. They're talking about stuff, but it doesn't have anything to do with us. And in that in particular. So look, I don't know much about Wall Street or investing. I know nothing. I could learn. It's not just stupidity. It's also willful stupidity, because I could learn at this point. So I get it. I don't know about this stuff, but I have a feeling he doesn't either, because they said, is it just coronavirus? Because the stock market is down. And he's like, well, it's that, but it's also Bernie. And as an example, he brought these relevant stocks and said, look, they're down 3%, 4%, 5%. So it's there too. But the whole stock market is down. Wouldn't you have to show that those in particular are down over and above the average drop across all industries? He didn't do any of that. He just said they're down, but they're all down. It could be that, cereal companies are scared of Bernie Sanders and car companies are scared of Bernie Sanders. After all, those are down too. You could make that segment about literally anything you want. And because it's Fox, they will do that. And they wanted to be about Bernie Sanders because that's who they're afraid of.
To be fair though, they're probably down because Bernie's rising.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
I'm trying to make a point here. Anyway, okay, we are going to take a short break. We come back. Candidate is going to join us on the other side. And now I'd like to welcome back to the show congressional candidate for Oregon's 3rd District, Albert Lee. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Hey there, how's it going? Thank you.
That's good. Glad to have you here. You're coming on the wake of a good weekend in politics, so we're very excited to catch up with your race. It's been a couple of months since we last spoke, so tell us how things have been going.
Yes, first of all, I think you're right. It's been a great couple of days. I'm part of that political revolution that started in Iowa, moved on to New Hampshire and down to Nevada, and now moving on to South Carolina. Quite frankly, I think that a very large percentage of the population is tired of a government that only works for those at the very top and not all of us. So as far as this race is concerned, we are doing very well. We are knocking on many doors, meeting with many different people, doing lots of interviews today. We've got 4 interviews, as a matter of fact, and we're getting the word out. Obviously, we're doing this without any corporate contributions. We're doing this 100% backed by the people, and that's the way to do it.
I want to ask you something I've been thinking a lot about in a number of these contested primaries where you're lucky if you get one poll, and most of them don't even get one poll. So when you're going month by month and you're trying to get an idea of how you're doing, what are some of the things you're turning to get an idea, potentially in the absence of any reliable polling information?
Certainly. Well, social media does help us a lot. And then, like I said, when we're out on the streets and in the neighborhoods, I've been stopped I've been stopped repeatedly by many people who have said, thank you. Thank you for running. Thank you for being out there. Thank you for giving us an opportunity, a chance for a voice, our voice to be heard. I know that our incumbent has done one poll so far, asking if people are ready for a socialist to represent them. And I appreciate that. And I know that we're making him run a really hard campaign. I mean, he's updated his website. He's knocking on doors. You're going to see bumper stickers from him apparently as well. First time for all of those things, because quite frankly, in the 2.5 decades that he's been in office, he's never had to run.
You know, it's funny because what you just described, we've seen in other candidacies where finally they have to do something because they're taking a primary seriously. But it is sort of sad that like taking it seriously means updating a website, which is probably something he told one of his employees to do, and knocking on doors. I mean, maybe having a town hall, that's something. That's democracy in action.
Well, I'll tell you what democracy in action is. Democracy in action is having open forums and open debates. It's something that our incumbent is afraid to do. He is afraid to acknowledge this campaign. He's afraid to go and stand up against his 24 years of service. And I think that that is just unfortunate for the people.
So I want to talk to you about one of the components of your platform that I'm not sure that we got to in our previous conversation back in October of last year. But you're in favor of a maximum wage. Now, a lot of people have heard obviously about the minimum wage and debates about potentially raising it. Tell us about the concept of a maximum wage.
Certainly. So, I mean, when you look at the 1950s versus today, in the 1950s, it was a 7-to-1 ratio, an 8-to-1 ratio from the person at the very top of a company to the person at the very bottom and what they made. Today, I think that figure is something like 800-to-1. And that is absolutely obscene. It's part of that immense wealth gap that we have. And quite frankly, we have had a suppression of our minimum wage to the point that over the last 40 years, while productivity has gone through the roof, that has created this immense wealth gap. Now, one way to curb that might be to provide a maximum wage. In other words, if you have a maximum wage, you cannot make more than a certain multiplier of the minimum wage, which would help to raise that minimum wage.
Well, and it would certainly help to fight income inequality, obviously, by its very nature. So I'm curious.
Flatten it all together, you know? Mm-hmm. Right now, we here in the States, we have, if you look at the minimum wage from the 1970s to now and just pegged it to inflation, the minimum wage should be somewhere in the neighborhood of $33 an hour, and it's not.
You know, I'm curious. So you're running, you're a vocal supporter of Bernie Sanders. So obviously having in this race, that must come with some benefits for someone with your message. On the other side, you now have Mike Bloomberg who's running, the wealthiest person potentially ever to run for president, certainly in our lifetime, spending hundreds of millions of dollars. Does that help too? People seeing how, when we talk about income inequality, we're not talking necessarily about millionaires or even billionaires, but people who have far more money than billionaires do.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, when you look at somebody like Bloomberg, I think he just activates regular people who are just frustrated by the inequality. I mean, the hundreds of millions of dollars that he spent on the campaign, I remember reading an article. It basically, if you peg that to what an average person makes, he's spent the amount or the equivalent of a large pepperoni pizza to do his race. And that's just obscene to have that kind of amount of money and not have to really do the campaign and talk to the people. And you saw in that debate how he absolutely just got demolished. We need true fighters. We need people that are going to represent the people, who are going to stand up for regular everyday folks. And I think that we need true citizen representatives. It's time that we get rid of all of the career elite multimillionaire politicians, replace them with citizen representatives who know the struggle, who won't take corporate contributions, who will truly represent and fight for the people. For instance, you know, our incumbent talks about having publicly funded campaigns and ending getting money out of politics, but 65% of his money comes from corporations. 100% of our contributions come from people. And, you know, we're taking the hard road, but we think that this is the right way to do it.
So your primary is May 19th. You still have a little bit of time. If people would like to find out more about your run, where can they go?
AlbertLee2020.com is the best place to go. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.
Okay, Albert Lee, once again, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. We're going to take one last break. We come back. How is Michael Bloomberg doing in the wake of his just really sterling performance at that debate? We'll give you the numbers after this. So for a couple months, Mike Bloomberg had his ads. And if you're a regular person, that's all you knew about him was what he told you in his ads. He'll get it done, he'll get it done, he'll get it done, he'll get it done. And then we had a debate. Did he get it done? Well, we've got some numbers, which we're gonna go to. Before the numbers, really fast, what was your overall impression of his debate performance last week?
Oh, unbelievable. He did such a wonderful job.
Yeah?
Yeah, right?
Didn't okay. You?
He just oozed charisma as he was getting pummeled in the face by Elizabeth
yeah,
Warren.
Yeah, yeah. There was a comedian who said there's only two things you ooze. It's charisma and stuff that you don't want oozing out of your body. I would argue it wasn't charisma that he was oozing.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's take a look at some of the numbers. Mm. So overall, how did support for different candidates change pre-debate, post-debate? Well, you got like Bernie Sanders going up a couple points. Elizabeth Warren went up a couple points. She had possibly the best debate of her life. And Mike Bloomberg dropping 3. Now that is not a huge drop, to be fair. It was a small change. But let's zoom in on Mike Bloomberg, his numbers, not his face. And let's see for different groups, how were they affected? So there's a lot in here. I'll break down some, let's move on. And then you're seeing his overall popularity, favorability, dropped 20 points before and after the debate. And if you start to break it down, you see men actually had a bigger drop than women, which is interesting.
Well, he's just so sexy, it must be.
Obviously, that's gonna buoy him a little bit. Moderates, it dropped 30 points. if he had just come out, punted a kitten and walked off, he wouldn't have lost 30 points. How do you lose 30 points? There's only 100 points you could lose.
Please just inject this right into my veins right now.
30 points!
That's all I need for today to fuel me. I don't need food, I don't need water.
Yeah.
This is all I needed, this story.
30 points. No, but that's not the most amazing number there.
Yeah.
Do you know the most amazing number?
No, tell me.
Put that back up. The most amazing number is the one number in green. The one number he went up, conservatives like,
not
so bad. Plus 2 points for Mike Bloomberg from that disastrous performance.
Well,
they also probably would have liked the kitten punting. But anyway.
No, it's amazing. Look, I despise Mike Bloomberg. I do some reporting, right? So I have to sort of.
Some.
So I have to sometimes, put on that hat, but I can't even pretend to be neutral or whatever. He's a terrible human being, and nominating him, as I was saying to you in the break, it would be the end of democracy, and I don't say that lightly. It would mean that the one left-wing opposition party to Donald Trump has been taken over by a right-wing plutocrat, basically removing the teeth of any semblance of a left-wing party, and it would be quite disastrous. Mm. And again, it would, for campaign finance reasons alone, but also the fact that we have such a dangerous person in office, and he would 100% lose to Donald Trump. 100%. He has no speaking skills, despite being a politician for so much of his life. He has horrible policies. He stands for absolutely nothing. And the areas we need to win are the Midwest. And he's on tape condescending to farmers, saying anyone can do it. And he uses words like, what he called the intelligentsia. He said that they're not a part of the intelligentsia like us in the room. Come on, he talks down to just regular people. He wants to rule over them in this old school aristocratic, controlling, creepy way. That does not play in the Midwest.
Oh, I don't think it really plays anywhere.
Anywhere, but I mean specifically, Trump just has to go on stage and go, soda ban, and walk off.
Uh-huh.
Walk off, because that epitomizes Mike Bloomberg and why he'd be an awful candidate. So I love to see it. I love to see these numbers.
Yeah, it's just
thank you, Elizabeth Warren. She's made some huge mistakes recently, but by God, that was epic what she did to him. And right off the bat, because people tune out even if they're watching,
That's true.
After
fast.
Half an hour, first time she spoke, just completely.
Was the horse-faced lesbian line.
Yes,
yeah.
TKO, first time she spoke.
She walked into the prison yard and she punched him in the face, effectively. Yeah,
right.
I'm supporting Bernie, and Elizabeth Warren has done some stuff, especially recently, that I couldn't dislike more. But that was the best debate performance I've seen in my life.
Yep.
I think. I don't know that it will be enough to help her or whatever, but that was great.
But it could have been the Christie moment, right? Like when Christie just took out Marco Rubio on his way out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Although Christie, any of them, hypothetically, you're tough guys, right? You're tough, smart guys. You could have done this to Trump. He's potentially easier to hit than Mike Bloomberg, but they didn't do it.
Because
they didn't do it.
Trump at least has charisma. I know that that's hard for me to say to you, but he does. He's funny. He's a trash talker.
You're
he's
a sick, brash. Sick person.
I'm immoral because I just pointed out Trump's political.
I don't think he has charisma.
Or political attributes. Yeah, he 100% does.
Okay.
John.
So on tomorrow's show, she was going to be on.
Right.
Going to be.
I'm
going to
be in
but anyway.
A puddle of blood at the end of this.
I'm not going to hit you. Jesus. I'm not Mike Bloomberg. Anyway, he has not done that. It's just he's done all the other bad things. I meant if you were a kitten, he would punt you. But anyway, we do have a debate coming up tomorrow. And so we're going to see. Was this an aberration or is he this bad? Because I expect Elizabeth Warren, how much does she want to punch him again? Oh, I can't wait. Anyway, thank you everybody for joining us throughout the show. Thank you
thank
as well.
You, John.
Great to have you here.
Thank you, John.
And we got more of you potentially later on this week. We're going to be doing the main show together. Emma's going to be leading the second hour.
Yes.
So that should be exciting as well. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.